When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
David Wells has pitched a perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
To save his life, call his wife and
hey, I was in there with Fleetwood talking and I completely got, I thought I was in break, not the top of the hour with the Utse. I completely forgot. I'm sitting in there, all of a sudden the music hits. I'm like, why don't you tell me? But yeah, I probably should have been aware. All right, 888-808-1019.
It's the 1 year anniversary of your show. Congratulations, you know, by the way. I thought you knew.
That's a good point. I didn't even mention that. That is true. For all of you fans, it has been a year. I didn't even think of that. This is now a year. My first show last year was July 10th. I didn't prepare anything. I completely forgot. A full year of McMonagle in the Overnight. For those of you who like it, congratulations. For those of you who can't stand it, I'm sorry. But I'm here, and I'm here for a little bit longer at least. But 1 year down. How about that? Thank you for the reminder, Fleegs. I appreciate it. And where's the cake? You give me a cake or something? Probably not. I'm sure Gio got a cake on his 1 year anniversary. 888-808-1019. All right, so let's take a little giant calls. As I said, you know, I mean, I'm trying to be fair here because I like to be fair. And I am gleaning all this from one phone call with Saquon Barkley, and it's probably in the midst of negotiations, and he knows he's not going to get an offer there. But it just seemed like, and especially now that he went to Philadelphia, it just seemed like this thing was dead for a while. And I understand, I'm not even blaming Saquon. He was obviously a huge focal point of the offense. He was, you know, the playoff year, I mean, he was instrumental. He's done everything the Giants could have asked him to do. I'm sure at one time he really did desperately want to continue his career as a Giant and be a Giant for life. I don't think that's always was a lie or always a misinterpretation of exactly how he felt. I'm sure it was. But somewhere along the line during this negotiation, I think the Giants grew weary of what he was unwilling to take. And I think Saquon Barkley got fed up with the offers he was getting. And it was doomed to not happen. Now, I think you could make the strong case the Giants are much better off not giving him that contract that Philadelphia gave him. And we'll see at the end if he does circle back, and that was at the end of the phone call, will you circle back and give us an opportunity to match? And Saquon pretty much said, well, you know, I've told you where I want to be. So, I mean, he indicated, yes, I will. So we'll find out if he does. But honestly, I think the Giants are better off without him for that money. And we'll move forward and we'll see. And now this is the year of Daniel Jones. And the quarterback just found out, if he didn't know already, and I'm sure they prepped him for it, but the quarterback just found out that they were heavily invested in moving up. And that Joe Shane had a lot, was, you know, making sure he talked to New England, and Brian Daboll was really enjoying himself talking to young quarterbacks and going through. And I found it fascinating that's how he handled it. The way Joe Shane handled it was draw up your favorite play, and now I'm going to pick it apart and try and make it my play, and let's see how we do it. I thought that was an interesting, fascinating way to go about it. I mean, you would think, I've always just assumed that they would just talk to him about you find common ground. You don't want to just throw absolute craziness out in the Y2 banana, you know, that famous clip of Sims getting it in Tampa Bay from John Gruden. But I didn't know that it would be like, hey, draw up your stuff, and now I'm going to pick it apart. And I'm going to change it, and I'm going to erase the X, make them the Y. Erase the Y, make them the X. Erase the T, make them the R. Blah, 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 blah. And then quickly, and the best part was he was asking Jaden Daniels about who he would turn to if he struggles. He's like, hey, we play in a big market. say the season starts, we're 0-3, and you know you're getting it from all ends. Like, who do you talk to? Where do you, you know, where do you go for guidance or whatever? And he's like, well, you know, I think I would talk. Oh, stop right there. What was that play I gave you 5 minutes ago? Like, it was just, it was very fascinating how it was done. And I've, as much as I wanted it to happen then, I wish I can go back and make it happen again, because man, watching those meetings and watching Joe Shane and Brian Daboll specifically handle that and look like they wanted it to work out so much, man, how much more excitement would the Giants have right now? How much more excitement would the Giants have right now if they had a young, if they traded up for a young stud quarterback, or believed and perceived, of course, we don't know. But if they had Drake May right now and we saw this, imagine if we saw this now and saw this meeting now. Ugh. But hey, Daniel Jones, take six. Like I said, sometimes three's the charm. Nope, not for me. For me, six. Six was the charm, just like my cousin Vinny. Took him six times to pass the bar. Maybe it'll take Daniel Jones six seasons to finally show that he's a quarterback. Jose in Newburgh. What's up, Jose?
Cousin Vinny, you can't beat that.
Can't beat my cousin Vinny. The whole store's never got the flu. You got that? So I wore this ridiculous thing for you.
Bad, my problem. Listen,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I don't know what it is about Daniel Jones, but I'm a believer in Daniel Jones.
Okay.
I've seen what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
I loved his legs. I don't know if he can use his legs. I worry about his him being durable. But now
you don't say. You don't say, Jose. Are you worried about Daniel Jones' durability? What in the world would give you pause for such a thing?
Listen, you know, the playoff run he had was solid, and he didn't have much, man. I want to jump over to Saquon, man. That's something like Dickie said. Listen. The Giants didn't owe him anything. Half his career was on the sideline, and they still paid him. If anything, I feel like he should have more loyalty to us. Though, with the salary cap, it wasn't worth it.
No, listen, I think there's two things. I agree and disagree with you. The Giants owed him nothing, and Saquon Barkley owed them nothing. I mean, they didn't build a team around him. They didn't give him an offensive line. There are gripes you could have if you're Saquon Barkley in his camp. There's no doubt about it. But I agree with you. The Giants didn't owe him anything. They gave him the second overall pick. He got paid very good because of it. He was injured a lot of the time, and it wasn't just a knee injury. It was every year he's good for a high ankle sprain 3 or 4 weeks. Every single year. And I'm not knocking him. He's a world-class talent, and he carried them. He did a ton to get them to the playoffs that year. He had a great year. He's a great player. He was a terrific Giant, an example of what being a Giant is. Great in the community, all of it. Great, great guy. And if it would have worked out, great. But it didn't, and I understand why. But both sides didn't owe anybody anything. That's how it works, man. It's the business. He didn't owe the Giants a damn thing. He didn't even owe the Giants a phone call. I mean, Joe Shane is asking for one. Hey, make sure you come back to us. But he doesn't even owe them that. If he wants to take the best offer as soon as he gets it, that's his prerogative. He doesn't owe the Giants anything. We want to be mad about it? We could be mad about it. I don't care. You want to find someone to blame? Blame away. I'm watching it. Those two sides were not getting together. After that phone call, and now I know it's with hindsight because we know what we know. And again, maybe I'm putting too much emphasis on one phone call. I'm sure there were hundreds, and I'm sure he knew he was getting just a phone call to be told some nonsense where he wasn't going to get a contract offer. I can understand frustration being built. I'm not blaming Saquon. I'm not mad at Saquon. I'm just saying, as an observer of that show, that phone call reeks of, nobody wants this to happen. It's just, nobody wants this to happen. It's done. You could feel it. It's done. And I think it's probably best for both sides. I think Saquon is going to be far more successful and far more productive this year, at least specifically, with the Eagles than he would have been with the Giants. And I think the Giants aren't in a place roster-wise to pay that kind of money to a 27-year-old quarterback, running back, excuse me, with injury problems. Now, the Daniel Jones thing, you said, you're worried about his durability, are you? Yeah. What a shocker. And you love his legs. He can run. His legs are his biggest weapon, right? I totally agree. Now he's got a blown out knee, so I don't know what his legs are. And even if he recovers from that, which it usually takes running backs 2 years, but say he recovers it from this year, now I'm worried about his neck every time he gets hurt on top of it. And it's year six. Like, how many do you get? How many do you get? That's my only point. That's my only point. It's now, how many do you get? Aldo, what's up, Aldo?
Happy birthday to you. Congratulations on the 1 year.
Thank you very much, Aldo. I appreciate that. Yes, and a year in the making. How quickly time flies.
And they should bring in like a big, an Entenmann's cake.
Something.
Or whatever.
It would be nice. I know it's early in the morning, but, you know, I forgot. I figured as soon as I walked in, everybody would be here. The sales team, everybody would be here to greet me, throw confetti. I got none of that.
Yeah, they could have hired people to come in late at night. They should have had at least a giant Carvel cake to come.
Right.
They could have... those guys, they wouldn't.
They could have hired people to welcome me into the building. Yes, they could have.
Yeah, but knowing them, if it was an ice cream cake, they would probably leave it out. It would melt or something. It would be something stupid with that.
Yeah, let me tell you, Aldo, if it was ice cream cake and it was melting, I can guarantee you there would be someone from engineering with a spoon slurping that bad boy up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's how it works around here. Somebody would be there. I heard the other day, it got to be a week ago now, there was a cake out there, and I guess they were giving it to Pat Boyle, who was eating cake 12 hours late, even longer than that. That stuff goes. It's amazing. And especially, we used to have Mark Chernoff here who would throw things out. Nobody throws anything. Everyone just assumes, I'll leave it. Someone will eat it. Someone will take it. Which, by the way, whoever got the, I want to make sure I get the name. I think it was Melinda's. Whoever had the Melinda's sauces delivered to them, or the morning show, whoever's got the Melinda's sauce deal. I took one of them home that was still there. I have to admit, it was it fit all my macro criteria. It's like a Korean, like, hot barbecue sauce. Delicious. Thank you very much, whoever got that delivery of assorted Melinda's sauces, because I got one in my house right now that is setting off my eggs. Just absolutely just setting off breakfast. So thank you very much. I'll take that as the gift for my 1 year anniversary.
Happy birthday, Dick.
Thank you very much. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on, Dan? How you doing this morning?
Good, Val. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, I was going to leave you alone tonight, but you said...
But you figured you had to call and bother me. Yeah, come on. What do you want?
Well, no. I'm listening. You said something about the Giants.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you about that because I'm really interested about that one. And then you said something also about Rodon, and I just wanted to put one little piece in there. You know, I think, like, I'm starting to get the feeling that his hard-headedness, to quote my mother, my West Indian mother, my Trini mother, his hard-headedness is going to get him in trouble because I feel like, you know, like, even when Blake came out there, it's almost like he had to tell him, like, this is not what we discussed, bro. And he had to get him back in line with whether it was pitch selection, pitch location, or how they were trying to get through, you know, the strategy that they use, whether it's, like, the off-speed stuff up front or whatever it is like that. Like, yeah. They had a conversation. And Rodon, with this stubbornness, like, because I told you that already with Blake, and I felt like he was trying to work with everybody else. He got the bounce-back performance from Hill. Nessa looked okay. Cola's coming along. And Rodon seems to be the one that's, like, constantly fighting them when they tell him things. And when you said that about that, like, I thought for a minute that there wouldn't be a chance in the near future of him being traded because of his contract. But that hard-headedness is going to get him in problems.
He ain't getting traded.
But to get to... Huh?
He ain't getting traded. No one's going to trade for him.
I know, because his value at this point is, like, you know, never mind whether they want to or not, it's like, who will take him? But that hard-headedness is going to get him in problems. But the thing that really intrigued me about what you were talking about with the Hard Knock stuff, and I haven't seen any of the episodes.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you a question about this with the Dable discussions,
mm-hmm.
and also if Shane said anything. Please kind of gave me a little cue into my answer already. But I was of the impression that they were kind of hoping that because if you assume that May and all the other guys were going to go wherever they were going to go, unless New England or for some reason one of the other guys decided that they were going to trade away those picks, I was under the impression that they, once they realized what was going on, they were kind of settling with the fact that they might have been able to get Penix if he had dropped to them. And so I'm interested because it sounds like from everything that you said, because I thought for a long time now I've been holding it in my mind that Atlanta kind of blew up their plans. But from what you're saying, it sounds like Penix was never even in
any
of their thought process at all.
Well, I don't know that for sure. Valley wasn't, he wasn't one of the quarterbacks in these meetings that they showed on this TV show. Like, it doesn't mean, I'm sure they met with Penix at some level. If I'm trying to recall here and see if I remember specific reports of them meeting with Penix, I'm sure they did. They met with all the quarterbacks. But it just wasn't on this episode of Hard Knocks. It wasn't part of the discussion or the show. It doesn't mean they didn't meet with them necessarily. And look, it opens up. The first thing you hear from Brian Daboll in those, before the meeting start, was him praising Malik. It opens it up with saying, I spent all night last night talking to Malik Nabers, or watching Malik Nabers. And he's a dog. So I think I don't think it's just strictly quarterbacks. Don't get me wrong. I don't think Daboll was just focused on making sure they got a quarterback. I just think that watching him talk to the quarterbacks, it's clear as day. The guy got excited talking to, I mean, you could sense it. Now, it just might be one of his favorite things to do, and he didn't necessarily have any sort of feelings towards any of the guys, but, I mean, this is why he was brought here. This is why he was brought here. And I'm just personally going to be frustrated. I know we talked about, the great run Daniel Jones had in the playoffs. They had one game. One game. And then the second game, they got blown out. They won 9 games. And just if we make it through this, if they bring Daboll here, if they bring Joe Shane here specifically because they drafted and developed Josh Allen in Buffalo and turned that program around, and they bring him here and we just try it again, let's see Daniel Jones era on these guys, and they don't make it out of the let's try it one more time Daniel Jones era, it's going to piss me off. Because I'm watching Brian Daboll, and I'm watching this guy, and I'm glad he's taken over the play calling because I believe in his offensive skill set. And it's just going to bother me if we get through an entire Daboll era and he never had a chance with a young quarterback. But now it's getting to the point where how many years down the road can you give him a chance with a young quarterback? You're going to have 4 losing seasons with Brian Daboll before you give him a young quarterback? Like, it's just sometimes timing in the NFL sucks, and that's why last year I was so gung-ho on moving up and taking the quarterback, because it was a quarterback draft. They were right there at 6, and I don't know if the timing will ever work out like that again. And we saw on Hard Knocks, they tried.
Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
So 2 other things from Hard Knocks real quick I wanted to bring up. One, when they were meeting with Nabers, Brian Daboll asked him how he handles not getting targeted early, not getting the ball early in games. And I didn't think the answer was great, but apparently, you know, Daboll said that's exactly what I'm looking for. He said, I don't take it very well. I put all the work in all week. You know, I feel like I'm someone who impacts the game, whatever, and if early on, if I'm not getting the ball, I don't take it very well at all. And while, sure, we all want the guys who want the moment, you want guys who want the ball on some level, and that's what Daboll said, but to just flat out be like, no, I don't take it very well if I'm not throwing the ball early in the game, I'm just like, okay. Well, I don't know if you've watched the Giants play, and this isn't to knock Daniel Jones, I'm just saying. They haven't had a wide receiver like him, to be fair. We all get it. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see how that goes. I'm hoping that's not a problem. It certainly wasn't a problem with the Giants. It seemed like Dable liked the answer, and it seemed like, I mean, obviously they drafted him, so they had no problem with it, but it wasn't an answer I would have been looking for. I mean, I don't know. I guess. I don't know what you answer with it, but it just jumped out at me. Because, you know, wide receivers have such this stereotypical diva persona to a lot of these great wide receivers. And the idea of like, well, what does not handle it well mean? Does it mean you're going to start yelling and walking up the sidelines and getting mad and screaming at people? Or does it mean, you know, you're going to be unapproachable and you're going to be pissed off? Or like, what exactly does not handle it well mean for me? And then the other one is, we get mad, especially, and let me just take it as I have Cashman calls up here on the fan. We're going to get right to it, 888-808-1019. Call me about the Yankees, Brian Cashman, the Mets, obviously the Giants. But the other thing that was funny to me, because we get so mad, especially to the Yankees, as Yankee fans, they get so mad at Cashman, they get so mad at Aaron Boone at press conferences. Jet fans, too, get so mad about this stuff. We get mad about being disingenuous. Right, get mad about lying, getting mad about, you know, that's not true about the injury or this. Or like, we get so mad about this stuff. In this show, as he's doing prep, Joe Shane, that is, doing prep for his press conference, he flat out lies and prepped to lie about Saquon Barkley and the franchise tag. They made it very clear from episode one of this that they had zero interest in tagging him and trying to trade him. That tagging was completely off the table. Now, I know why they lied, right? It's in no one's interest to understand. But I'm just, like, that's part of it. Like, we get so mad when we find out things weren't exactly accurate or true. Like, this is teams' jobs and responsibilities. They're not going to tell the fans everything. They're not going to be totally, he was asked flat out, Is the franchise tag for Saquon off the table? No, I wouldn't say it's off the table. Literally in the prep, he's like, well, I'm not going to tell them I'm not franchise tagging them. Yeah, clearly, because it's not in the best interest of the franchise, nor is saying the exact accurate thing about an injury, nor is anything else that they deem not important to tell you the exact truth on. And I'm curious if any Giant fans today are upset that they were lied to about the franchise tag and Saquon Barkley. Hell, I know I did opens and talked about Saquon Barkley saying, see, they're open to the franchise tag. He lied to me. I'm out here looking like a fool. And I don't need any help with that, Joe Shane. So just remember that the next time we all get pissed off about white lies and slight untruths and all that stuff in press conferences. Teams aren't going to tell you the exact truth. Get over it. Danny and Belrose, what's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. Happy anniversary. How you doing?
Thank you very much. Good. I forgot that it was my anniversary. Fleegleman mentioned it. Yes.
I forgot too.
And listen, you're recently married. You better not be forgetting anniversaries. You better get that straight right now.
Yeah, something funny. You know how it's spies like us. They're like, oh, whatever happened to a handshake and a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
You keep your job. There's your celebration. So let's get to the Cashman in his head if he doesn't pick this team. So what do you call him? I've been looking at it. I saw, you know, he was talking in that press conference. Yeah, he knows his head's on the line. It's been on for a long time. They give him a lot of chances. Number one, DJ LeMahieu, gone after this year. That needs to go. Number two, Gleyber Torres needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, they need to sit down Rodon and talk to him and say, stop being a hothead. Listen to the team. Listen to Blake. Like, enough is enough. You're a good pitcher. You're talented. You know, be on the same page. You know, the next number, because it's so early. They need to get a stud reliever in the bullpen. They also need to get, you know, a better third baseman. And I'll let you talk and see what you guys say.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for the call, Dan. Thank you for always being there. You always call me Danny. And I appreciate it. I don't know how hot his seat is. It's impossible to tell. Brian Cashman, as much as I'll defend him, I mean, I don't know how they view him other than they trust him implicitly. And I've said this for a long time. I think the owner is scared to fire Brian Cashman because that means he has to do things differently for the first time in his life. I mean, When's, they haven't even had to think twice. Brian Cashman runs the whole show. I mean, he's in on the meetings. He listens to Brian Cashman. He has his opinion. He'll force certain things. He'll make sure they don't do certain things. Nope, there's no money for this. There's no money. So it's not like he does nothing necessarily, Hal Steinbrenner. But he walked into it. He's been doing it this whole time. Of the format of Brian Cashman runs the show. He takes care of everything. He takes care of the hiring. He takes care of how it's run. He takes care of how it's operated. And they trust him at a level where he doesn't have to get involved with Brian Cashman because he trusts Brian Cashman. If you hire someone else, he might not have that same level of, okay, I'll just let him do his business without much of a hands-on approach because I trust him. Like his entire world as owner of the New York Yankees gets twist-turned upside down. Just like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Bel-Air. I said Bel-Air. I don't know why. I mean, it's a brand new world without Brian Cashman, and I think he's hesitant to do so. Plus, they've been rather successful. So it's hard for me to tell you. I would think if they don't make the playoffs and this thing gets to that epic kind of collapse, that there's no way Boone or Cashman keep their job. I couldn't imagine it, but I don't know. To be quite honest with you, I just don't know. Boone, I would think, would definitely be gone. Cashman, I don't know. It's hard for me to say for certain, as bad as it could possibly get, that this owner would fire Brian Cashman. I just don't know. But then as far as your other stuff, like DJ LeMahieu in next year, I don't care. I don't see how they get rid of him making, I think he's $15 million. I don't think they're just going to cut him next year, but that's next year. I don't care. I'm focused on this year. Gleyber Torres, next year, I agree with you. He's not going to be here. I don't care at this moment. I'm more concerned about how you fix this team. Now, your point about relievers, yeah, they got Efros coming back. They need at least one major back end of the bullpen kind of arm. Not just another guy, not just the Maton trade that the Mets just made, like a legitimate, excellent reliever. They need at least one if Efros is going to come back and be that for them. Then they need one. If Efros comes back or it doesn't feel like that's going to happen, or I would be out there trying to get two back end of the relief, back end of the bullpen relievers if I could. They also need an infielder, whether it be at third base would be my preference to get someone to come and play third base for DJ LeMahieu. But I'm open to any kind of infielder. They need an infielder with a bat. And I don't know about the starting rotation. It just feels like that's all too much. They're going to have to get by on some of this. And mainly for me, I mentioned it before, there's three players who need to turn it around. Gleyber Torres, Alex Verdugo, and Anthony Volpe. If those three players play the rest of the season like they've played the last month, it doesn't matter what Brian Cashman does. He can't overcome everything. He can fix third base a little bit. He can get some relievers. He's not going to be able to replace those three guys. Maybe Dominguez and Stanton both get healthy and Dominguez can play instead of Verdugo, but there's only so much he could do. Peter in Manhattan, what's up, Pete?
How you doing, Chris? That's congratulations.
Thank you.
Another 35 years, hopefully, you can go and you can catch a smooth. You can
He didn't do that many in overnight.
I really enjoy your show, Chris. You know, it's a great show. Chris, about Cashman, I mean, you know, the guy's been around forever. I mean, had tremendous success. The knack I have against him is, you know, the trade deadline, he doesn't really come up with the best players. And the reason for that, he wants to hold on to his farm players. I mean, you know, take a look at his history. I mean, it was a little different, you know, if you look 2000 and prior. I mean, he got justice. But, you know, the last few decades, he's not getting the best players because he wants to hold on to his farm place. So,
yeah,
you know, so that's just, you know.
I don't know. I mean, again, I don't know if that's entirely true. I mean, they traded... They traded all their best prospects for Sonny Gray. And, you know, I know this is Gio's favorite subject, but they traded for Sonny Gray. And Sonny Gray was the best premier pitcher on the market. He was an excellent ace starting type pitcher before he got traded to the Yankees. And since he left, he's been an ace type starting pitcher, whether it's in Minnesota or everywhere else he's been. Like, it just didn't work here for whatever reason. You want to kill Brian Cashman for it? Okay. And I don't know what it was with the coaching staff. They wanted him to get off his fastball because it wasn't, you know, upper 90s, and it hurt him. Whatever the case may be, he was great before, and he's been great after. It didn't work with the New York Yankees. There have been other trades where they trade, you know, I mean, Gallo, we all laugh at it now, and I get it. Oh, Joey Gallo, you're going to give me Joey Gallo, Chris? Are you serious? You're going to give me Joey Gallo? Joey Gallo was a two-time All-Star on his way to hitting 45 home runs. That was a major, him and World Series champion Anthony Rizzo, I mean, when you needed a left-handed pop, I mean, you couldn't do better than that. I know Anthony Rizzo and has now subsequently been a disaster, but at the time was great. And Gallo, we all laugh at because of how bad he was. In Texas, he's a two-time All-Star, Gold Glove-winning left fielder who hits 45 bombs a year. Yeah, he's all-or-nothing type player, but he hits 45 bombs a year. He did nothing with the New York Yankees. So I'm not trying to justify it. You're right. The trades have been bad. Montas. How did Montas look pitching for Cincinnati? How did he pitch with Oakland? Like, and the other thing, I will defend Brian Cashman on some level. The midseason trades have been bad. Can't argue, especially for starting pitching. Can't argue it, won't argue it. He needs to come up with a real humdinger this year. Did I say humdinger? Anyway, he's got to come up with a good trade. And they haven't been great. But here's the one thing I will say about him. He can't sit one out. They're the New York Yankees. They're expected to make moves. They're expected to try to bolster their team. And yes, he's trying to hold on to Peraza and Volpe over the last handful of years because he wants a starting shortstop to be cheap because his owner's telling him he's not going to spend a ton of money at every position. And he got two young prospect kids who look promising. He doesn't want to trade them for the best starting pitcher available. On some level, you need to come up with these prospects, don't you? On some level, you have to develop some of these young guys. And you don't want to trade away everybody. Right, that core that nobody wants to give Brian Cashman credit for building with Gene Stickmichael was built on not trading away Bernie Williams, Jorge Posada, Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, Andy Pettit. That's how it was built. So on some level, I understand. But he can't sit one out. So he's got to make the Montas trade. He's got to make this trade. He's got to make that trade. He's got to give it a try. It's like, oh, why would you trade for a pitcher with a shoulder? Because I can't just not do anything to help bolster a team that's on its way to winning 90 games and a division. I can't just sit on my hands and say, well, I hope we're good enough. I have to go out and attempt and take a chance and hope that he stays healthy and pitches for the Yankees. Like, that's part of it. He has to do it. Other GMs are allowed to sit it out. The Red Sox have sit it out, broken it down, done different things. The Rays, forget about it. They trade everybody away. They do different things. Now, they're very smart at doing it, but Brian Cashman can't even attempt to live that kind of life. He has to go out there and make moves. Doesn't mean they have to be bad, and I completely agree they've been bad. And that's why I'm open to moving on from them, especially if this year is a failure. But like, we don't ever think about that. We don't think of the idea that he has no option. He can't go, this isn't a good deal, I can't make it. He's got to go, well, what am I going to do? Sit on my hands, the fan base is going to kill me. I got to go out there and try and make this team the best it can be. I got to take a chance. Every year they're in it. Every year he's making trades. Some good, some bad. Mostly bad over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years for sure.
Manning takes the knee and the New York Giants are the Super Bowl 42 champions.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Off the mighty Patriots, 17-14.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, not quite closing time. Got another few minutes. 888-808-1019. Not yet. Semi-sonic. The hell out of here. Let's take a couple calls before we close shop. Ryan in Tarrytown. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Two things. Juan Soto, is he still injured? Like, where is it? Training center? Like, and should I think we should get Diaz's brother to request a trade from Cincinnati, right?
I mean, he closed the game against the Yankees. He would be an upgrade of some of the pieces. I don't know if...
So amongst the Diaz brothers to decide who closes out, Diaz got the job, right?
Yeah, I think you're trying to be funny, and I'm just not getting it, so we're going to move on. 888-808-1019. But yeah, listen, they need a reliever. He's been pitching for the Reds. I got to look up his numbers. He had a good World Baseball Classic last year, and he's had his moments. He's not his brother. About Juan Soto, because I talked about Juan Soto this morning a little bit, because I feel like we just regurgitate the same stuff, which it doesn't mean it's inaccurate. It just means we regurgitate it over and over again about it's only two guys in the lineup. All you have to do is pitch around Soto and Judge. Nobody else can beat you, blah, 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 blah. And the fact of the matter is that's not what's happening. If you watch that game last night, yes, he flew out 400 feet to dead center field with an opportunity to tie the game in the ninth, and he just fell short. That was a good at-bat, but a lot in this game, they're coming at him with fastballs, and he's popping it up, and he's hitting under 200 for the last, you know, 20 games. He's really struggled. He hasn't done a lot for this Yankee team. And at the beginning of the year, so much of the hot start, so much of the different feel around the team, so much of the urgency they had shown had been accredited to Juan Soto. It's the Juan Soto effect. We talked about it over and over again. His approach of hitting treated every pitch like a battle, every at-bat like a war. You know, Oswaldo Cabrera is learning so much just watching him at the batting cage. Like, it's a renewed vigor and a renewed urgency, and everything is great, and it's all because of Juan Soto. Nobody gave Boone any credit. Nobody gave Cashman or anybody else any credit. It was Juan Soto. So now that the urgency is gone, now that they're struggling, and now that he's not helping that much during this struggle, and it also reminds me of Lindor on some level a little bit, because Lindor right now at the Mets, he's killing it. But what's the problem with Lindor? And what has everybody been getting on him for? I heard a lot of talk this afternoon about Lindor and why the fan base gets on him and why there's so much talk about him not being as good as he is. And a lot of it is because while the Mets struggled, whether it was last year's June swoon or the early part of this season, when the Mets are at their worst and the seasons are falling apart, he doesn't play well. He struggles. As he goes, the team goes. And right now, he's killing it. Since they moved him to the leadoff spot, he's been one of the better teams in all of baseball. The fact he's not an all-star and you know, others on his team, like Pete Alonso, are an all-star. He's the only all-star. Pete Alonso's an all-star is ridiculous. He's been the catalyst for this team. He hits another home run last night. He's been brilliant. He's been the driving force of this team. And it almost feels a little bit like, one, I want Juan Soto to hit leadoff like Lindor has. But also, when things were hot, when the team was playing well, he was right there at the forefront of it. He was the catalyst for the team. He was the guy coming through with the big base hits. Judge was even slumping in April, and Soto was carrying the team, making throwing people out at home plate from the outfield. He was playing great. And now, I don't know, to your point, if he's injured. I don't know if he's still dealing with something in that forearm. I don't know if he, like last night, he had a swing at a, he was out in front on a changeup, and he kind of had a grimace to also quote the Mets. He kind of put a grimace on his face. Maybe he is still dealing with something, but he's out there playing every day. I can't make an assessment on his injury status. All I know is he's playing every day, and he's not been nearly as productive, and they need him. That's not to kill him. It's not to blame him, certainly. It's not to say anything other than we talk about how the Yankees have two great players, and that's all they have. And right now, they don't even have that. Because he hasn't been that for the last 3 months. 3 weeks, excuse me. We need him to be that guy again. I still want him to be a Yankee. I want him to get that contract. But it's just felt like for the last 2 months, since the minute he got here, we have spent so much energy, whether on this station, in the fan base, at the stadium, whatever it may be, trying to sell the New York Yankees to Juan Soto as a destination to stay and finish out his career. And while I still want that, now is the time for Juan Soto to make the case to the New York Yankees why he's worth $500+ million and why he's that secondary star they need next to Aaron Judge and why he's worth the 13-year contract he might get at his age in this free agency and why he's worth dealing with Scott Boras and why it's worth paying him more than Judge and why it's worth all this. Now's the time for him to sell us because they need him desperately. They need Gerrit Cole, they need Judge, they need a lot of guys, including Juan Soto. And we talk and talk and talk about whether or not the Yankees are a place he'll want to stay, and we talk and talk and talk about there are only two guys in the lineup, and we talk and talk and talk about the greatness of Juan Soto and Aaron Judge, and right now they're in it, the season's collapsing, and they need those two stars. And they're not being walked, they're not being pitched around. Judge came up the other night, I was there at the game, July 3rd, firework night. First and third, seventh inning, need Judge to do something. They didn't walk him. They pitched to him into a double play. Soto got fastballs down the middle in every at-bat last night, and he popped them up other than his final at-bat. It's time for everybody to contribute. Yeah, we can yell. I can yell this at Grisham. I don't have faith that Grisham will do anything. I can scream and yell that Wells needs to be better. I can scream and yell that Grisham needs to be better. I can scream and yell that the bottom of the lineup sucks. I don't know what I can get out of them. I know Soto's better than what he's been over the last 3 weeks, and I know they need him to be that guy yet again. Mitchell and Fort Lee loves ending the show. Mitch, you made the morning show yesterday, Mitch.
Oh, yeah, I made the morning show. Did you hear I called back in later in the day also?
I did not hear that, no.
Yeah, go play it back. You'll hear it. It was funny. And then I'm driving to our JFK airport yesterday,
yes.
Big Mac, and I get everyone calling me like, you know, everyone's talking about Mitch from Fort Lee. Am I Mitch from Fort Lee? And then afterwards I called back in and we cleared the air, so everything's good. They thought you hung up on me, but you didn't. It was the end of the time when, you know, you're going to the 6 o'clock show.
Absolutely right. I went to you despite the music already being hit because I didn't want you to feel like left out. I didn't want you to feel like I forgot about you, Mitch.
Big Mac, you never will. But I didn't know you were there on the night for the, when they had the fireworks. I was there also. What a horrible game that was also. What a horrible game that was.
Yeah, horrible game.
Okay, but Big Mac, I really came to the conclusion, and looking at the team, I think it's time for a change with Boone. It just doesn't seem like Boone can get these guys to play. And it's just, you know, you go for the first 2 months of the season, having the best record in baseball. Now
and, well, how did
die.
They do that with Boone as the manager?
How? Because they were playing well, but,
oh.
but when you
so wait a but, second, but wait, so wait a second, Mitch, I am going to have to let you go because we're up against it, and I try to get through as many calls, but I'm just trying to understand this all because it's very confusing. So you could be the best team in baseball and have the best record in baseball with Boone, and that's because the players are playing well, and then you go through a tough month, and it's a struggle, and you're losing, and they're not playing well. And that's Boone's fault, and they need to fire him. Because another manager would come in and figure out how to get them to play well the same way Boone did at the start of the year. Oh, no, wait, Boone had nothing to do at the start of the year. It's all very confusing. I'm trying to work this out. Someone's got to, like, send me some sort of exact timeline of when the players were playing well and when Boone had no impact, and then when the players were playing poorly and how Boone was the reason for it. Now, listen, I've gotten on Boone. It has nothing to do with the losing necessarily or the fact that Gleyber Torres is hitting 200 or that, you know, Volpe has fallen off. There's been some laziness. That's what bothers me. Grisham's kicking the ball around in center field. That's a gold glove center fielder, and it's coming from guys you don't expect it from. Grisham's a role player on this team. He needs to be involved when he gets a chance to play this much, and he's a gold glove caliber center fielder, and he's kicking the ball around. Anthony Volpe is this young Mr. Hustle Gold Glove winner, does everything right, steals bases, runs. He's the one not running home on a double play. LeMahieu's a cagey veteran. He's won batting titles in both the National and American League. He should not be the guy not knowing he has to stop running and make the guy come and tag him as opposed to just running into the out. Like, those are things, and it's coming from players I can't believe it's coming from. All right, Gleyber Torres has a history. He doesn't run ground balls out. That's something that they should monitor. That's something they should be more on top of. And guess what? They benched him for 2 days. And I'm frustrated with Boone because it has been an issue. And yes, these second half, you know, failings has become a tendency. And I'm the first one to tell you, I'm down on Boone right now, but it just boggles my mind, especially when I want to hear people's answer to that question. How did they do so well in the first half and they're doing so poorly now and it's all Boone's fault? And it's just, well, they were playing well. Oh, okay. They were playing well. So what the hell does it matter who you hire as the manager? We got to wait until the players play well. He was part of the reason they were good. He's part of the reason they were bad. Deal with it. And deal with the morning show because I'm out of here. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. Even you, Mitch. Even you. Fleegs, thank you to you as well. I'll catch you guys tomorrow. Back at it for a 2 a.m. show. Hopefully the Yankees actually win a game. The Mets will continue to do what they do. And Daniel Jones wakes up tomorrow morning in Daniel Jones' season. So we'll get to it all again tomorrow at 2 o'clock. I'll catch you then. I'm out of here. Warm-up show's next. Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Man. W.